PCU! Spade and Piven in the same movie together. This is my thesis, man. This is my closing argument. I can stop listening to Zombie Takeout! Welcome to episode 103 of Zombie Takeout, the B-movie and cult movie podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And we don't have any listeners submitted this week, so we're just going to launch straight into news.
Yeah, fuck them.
Our first story from Cinema Blend. Michael Bay wants Mark Wahlberg, Dwayne Johnson for his bodybuilding comedy.
Yeah, you just say the name Michael Bay and I get like this douche show.
Variety says Bay is in talks with Dwayne Johnson and Mark Wahlberg for Pain and Gain, a feature the trade describes as a darkly comedic bodybuilding pic about Florida weightlifters who become embroiled in an extortion and kidnapping scheme that goes awry. The story would be adapted from an article that ran in the Miami New Times back in 1999. Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely, who co-wrote Captain America together, wrote the original script and admitted mirrors Fargo.
I didn't know Mr. McFeely.
I was waiting Captain for America. A joke about that. there is also an update to the story. Apparently, Mark Wahlberg has passed on the project.
Now, wonder why.
Well, I have mixed feelings here. Now, okay, Michael Bay, y'all know my take on Michael Bay.
You really need to warn me when you're going to say his name next time.
Yeah,
you know?
Okay. But he has done a comedy before, Bad Boys.
Yes?
Bad Boys. And two. I mean, they were kind of comedic. It was Wahlberg.
Yeah.
It was Smith and Lawrence.
Yeah.
Not, I think it's better than his Explosion movies, personally. Not saying much for Michael Bay. The whole thing that gets me... Okay, a bodybuilding comedy called Pain and Gain. Yeah, I'm flashing back to
Kevin Nealon and Dana Carvey.
I'm thinking, what was that movie The Village People did?
Doing the Hans and Franz thing.
Yeah. However,
Captain
America was great, and they're saying it mirrors Fargo, which is interesting. So, kind of torn on this one.
They're suggesting that a Michael Bay movie
can mirror. They're just saying the script, so we don't know what it will turn into.
A Coen Brothers movie.
Yeah, fair enough.
Maybe 2012 is when the world comes to an end.
Yeah.
That sounds downright apocalyptic.
Uh-huh. And our next story from AV Club. Do not use Jesse Eisenberg's face to sell your crappy horror movie or he will sue you. Lionsgate attempted to move copies of the recently released DVD horror film Camp Hell by plastering Eisenberg's face across the cover. Eisenberg and his lawyers are now suing them.
Of course.
As well as Camp Hell production company Grindstone Entertainment for using his cover on the likeness and its trailer because he had a 5-second part in the movie that he said he was just doing to help a friend out.
Oh, but if he's actually in it, even if it is only for 5 seconds.
Yeah, they have a case.
He's
asking for $3 million in damages, far more than the film will likely make.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean...
He's in it. I'm assuming they have the right to use any footage from the movie on the cover.
Right.
But so, I can understand his perspective of not wanting his name associated. I was looking at some of the reviews on Amazon for the movie. Half say it's blasphemous, half say it's pro-Christian, which is interesting.
Alrighty then.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing, you know, Dogma. A lot of people blame, you know, said that was
exactly
blasphemous when it really wasn't. No. I mean,
and the movie is about a demonic possession at a Bible camp, so.
Huh.
I'm actually kind of curious to see it.
I think you've gotten my interest in too.
Especially with Eisenberg in it.
Yeah.
Been waiting
for him
to make a mistake. That brings us to this week's movie, and it is from 1994, PCU.
Or as we like to call it, back in the day.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the impromptu plot summary, which was going to be sponsored by Political Correctness, but they thought that it might offend someone, so they backed out.
Well, standing in is the Starland Vocal Band. When you absolutely positively have to torture a room full of motherfuckers, accept no imitations. All right, so PCU, we have our modern take on, well, or a 90s take at least, on the old school college movies.
Right.
We begin, they show this, you know, frat house and the picture of the fraternity, and then, of course, it hits 69 and, you know, all that tradition goes out the window, and I guess I'll get into the message after I know the broad summary. It's just a little weird, a little conflicted.
But so it starts with the classic, you know, oval pictures, you know, individual oval pictures, and then degenerate with a nice frame and, you know, sepia toned, and then hits 69, and it's a color photo of with no frame of just a bunch of hippies.
Right.
And then degenerates from there.
To 93, where it's just a Polaroid, and then that falls off the wall. Where they found a Polaroid from, I don't even know. It's 93. So the fraternities have been banned, and now it's been taken over by this group of just, I don't know what you'd call these guys.
Slackers.
What were they? Okay. It's been taken over by the slackers who, you know, like to party and stuff, and as if that were just like this alien thing in college in 1994. Where I think the writer went to Wesleyan University.
Yes, that and based it on Wesleyan.
Yeah. He should have gone to another college, apparently. 'Cause, wow. It was like he went to college on another planet. Because what we have here, we have groups that are pretty much doing the protest du jour, who apparently don't know how to have any fun for some reason or another. And there's this semblance of a plot that they're going to lose the pit, the slackers. They have to raise a certain amount of money, which is, of course...
Every college movie in the last 40 years.
Right. So they have this party, which is oddly enough the only party on campus, but I think, I don't know, maybe Wesleyan was like that, where they didn't have any parties on campus. Who knows? Who knows? I'll have to talk. I think I know somebody that went there. I'll have to ask them. But they have this, they're having bad luck getting the party together. You know, the hippies don't let them publicize it because they were nailing signs to trees. Instead of the million and one corkboards that are on a college campus, they couldn't get the band really together either. They kind of electrocuted themselves,
yeah,
I guess.
They blew out their equipment, yeah.
Yeah. Luckily, they stumble upon George Clinton, or George Clinton stumbles upon them. And this other subplot of the movie is, of course, this pre-Frosh who... gets the entire campus to hate him.
Completely accidentally.
Completely accidentally leads the entire campus to the party, and hilarity ensues.
Now you were saying it's unrealistic. Now, for me, and I think you had moved on by the time this movie had come out.
Yeah.
At OCC, we kind of considered this our Animal House.
Hmm.
We, you know, the group of us who were hanging out, we loved this movie. We kind of thought of ourselves as the pit.
Yeah.
Which we, I mean, even in your day, we kind of were.
Yeah, I could see that.
And I definitely think, I mean, yes, it was exaggerated and the whole, you know, breaking up of the fraternity system and needing to raise money with the party. And that's every cliche, you know, college movie since Animal House and probably before then.
Well, I don't know. The suggestion that the fraternities no longer exist.
I think there was a slight variation on Revenge of the Nerds, wasn't it?
Yeah,
Wasn't there
I
a
don't
similar
know.
plot in Revenge of the Nerds?
No, Revenge of the Nerds, they want to start their own fraternity.
Oh, yeah, and there was another one. Maybe it was one of the sequels. I saw a couple of them, but it was
Yeah.
something about ending the Greek system.
Huh.
But, that's contrived cliche college movie stuff.
It was almost a work of science fiction because the fraternity system,
Is never
you
going to go
know,
away. No.
right. I mean, it was there, believe me, when we were in, well, not at OCC, of
Well,
course,
yeah.
because it was a shit community college,
Right. It was a
but I
commuter school.
mean, even at Montclair, there was, you know, a pretty big Greek presence
And
there.
in the two 4-year schools that I went to, same thing.
Yeah.
But in terms of the stuff that's not that hasn't been done to death, the protesters and the whole early 90s setting, I think it was obviously exaggerated, but I think it was
Yeah.
pretty on the money.
I don't know, it was a little strange. It was I felt like it was a bunch of old guys who were writing this and you know, pretty much, oh, you kids don't know how to have fun. And then I look and realize that they were in fact, well, they're just a little bit older than us. So
Well,
it
that's the MacGuffin of the party to make money was obviously cliche. The
Yeah.
overly serious protesters and all of that and all of the political correctness, I think, was accurate to the time.
I don't know. I don't think I quite agree with that. I mean, I think it was obviously it was a caricature of it.
Oh, of course, yes, it was exaggerated.
And you know, I can see where they were talking about the whole, you know, they're just floating from one cause to another, and it, you know, it wasn't really all that serious. But the thought that, you know, just because they were protesting something, you know, and they couldn't have fun was just kind of weird, you know. Looking, if you're trying to look at it from a realistic
Well,
perspective.
it's a cheesy college movie. What's the
Yeah.
realism? I mean, they borrowed a scene practically from Back to the Future when the amps blow and the guitar players get thrown backwards.
Yeah, that's
That was
exactly where that
straight out
was
of Back
from.
to the Future.
Right.
Also, it was reference to the 90s. Something about the pacing and the use of music, very distinctly 90s.
I thought it was more 80s.
Really? It
Yeah.
felt like a lot of 90s comedies to me. I mean, and all of that stuff was built on a lot of the stuff that was done in the 80s, of course.
You know, the thing about, you know, the music playing when he sees the girl in the beginning and all that was,
Well,
that
that
felt,
was the 80s, yes.
yeah, that felt straight from, you know, like the Tom Cruise movie or whatever, you know?
But once it gets going and they're kind of, causing trouble with all of the cause heads and all of
Yeah.
that, it just felt very 90s to me, and I don't know what specifically about it felt 90s, but it did. It was also a lot shorter than I remembered it being. It was 1 hour 20.
Yeah, and the length of it was perfect. It
Yeah.
was
Well,
well-paced
it's a
there.
you want with comedy generally you want to keep them short. I can't think of a
Yeah.
2-hour comedy offhand that worked.
Right.
Also, I noticed something about Jeremy Piven. And I've seen a fair amount of his work. I wouldn't call myself a fan, but I can I don't mind him. But it just dawned on me in this one, he's kind of always doing a slight Jack Nicholson impression.
I was going to say he pretty much plays the same guy in
Well,
every
he
damn thing
does,
he's ever done.
yes.
I
And it's
actually the point that I came up with in from this because well, he's kind of from acting royalty around these parts. That good acting is not genetic, in fact.
Well, I don't. Like I said, not a fan. I can deal with them. Yes, he's the same guy in every movie, but I love Jack Nicholson, and he's the same guy in every movie too. And it occurred to me, Piven is kind of always doing a bit of a Jack Nicholson thing, especially in the beginning of this one when you first see him.
I
He's very Jack Nicholson.
yeah, and he was, I mean, they their family has like a theater school just north of here in
Oh,
Evanston.
wow.
Yeah, he's so he's I mean he's pretty much theater royalty, and he really couldn't act to save his life.
Well, no. Like you said, he's the same guy in every role.
But
Very true.
Nicholson does it well.
Yeah, true. Well, I'm not saying he's as good as Nicholson. I'm saying he's impersonating Nicholson, much like Christian Slater, who I think has maybe slightly more acting ability than Piven does.
As far as I know, could this be the only movie Piven has done that was not connected to John Cusack or his family?
Possibly.
Because everything he's done has either been because of, who he is, or which
who
I'm
knows.
I get a feeling that, he got in this because of who he is. The family has money too.
Well, who he is in that sense, because he really didn't have a career at this point.
Right,
right. Kind of the beginning for him.
Oh, of course, he didn't have a career. He shouldn't. He shouldn't. He still shouldn't to this day.
Well, that's beside the point. I'm saying he wasn't known at this point.
And then every other movie he's done has been his former roommate, John Cusack.
Okay. I have to see if he's somehow connected to Entourage and got him that gig.
Yeah.
Another note about Piven. He complained on the DVD commentary that the actors were not allowed to improvise at all, but he was able to slip in the "don't be that guy" line because he got the writers to say it was theirs. So the director did not want them to improvise whatsoever, and he talked the writers into saying, obviously he could have improvised it because, if he'd run it past the writers, but he did something off that the director wasn't expecting, said, "don't be that guy." And he talked the writers into taking credit, I guess, for whatever he said that wasn't in the script.
Why wouldn't they allow them to improvise?
Some directors are like that. They want to be slavish to the script.
Yeah. It's not like they were doing Chaucer here.
Oh, yeah. I have a feeling the director thought a bit more highly of the movie than he should have.
Right. I mean, if you look at the promotional picture of the movie where they have him wearing these, or they obviously, photoshopped, I don't know what you'd call it back in the day there, but they had him, it was Photoshop. He had Photoshop back then, what the hell?
Possibly. Or something similar.
The boxers and the t-shirt and the gown,
mm-hmm.
which obviously he wasn't wearing for the promotional thing.
Right.
You could tell what kind of movie they were trying to make there. Which improvisation would have helped, I think.
Possibly, depending on his abilities. I don't know if he can improvise.
That's true. That's very true.
Spade, on the other hand, I think could have helped it with some improv.
Actually, one of Piven's best roles, I think, was in the Rush Hour movie, was it not? One of them.
I've actually never seen the Rush Hour movies.
He was like it was just a bit, part, where he was like a kind of a gay tailor, and it was pretty much all improvisation. So, yeah, I think he can do it.
Now, speaking of not being able to act, the two other members of the Balls and Shaft, Spade's character's fraternity, why did they give them any lines when they knew they couldn't pull them off?
Well, because I'm sure the writers had written them.
Yeah. But, okay, more to the point, why did they cast those two? Because that was painful. I mean, there's a lot cliche and, some iffy performances, but those two. On the other hand, Spade, I think this is the only thing I've ever seen him in outside of SNL that I've liked him in.
I think he was just pretty much, again, the
same guy. He was the same guy, but it worked perfectly.
Every fucking movie he
does. He is, but in this case, it worked perfectly for him. It fit him perfectly.
And he's one of the few people that could actually pull off a college-aged kid.
Yeah.
But I do like how they explain Piven, being mm-hmm. too old for it, that he had a third sophomore year, which we knew those guys.
Uh-huh. I kind of was that guy for a while.
Oh, you were never, near some of the guys I'm thinking of.
Oh, okay. Now, one part of the movie that made me kind of feel a little old, when the Frosh, Tom, I think his name is.
Yeah.
He runs through the computer lab. And he accidentally, of course, kicks them all out of the surge protector.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this thinking, those computers look horribly dated. And then it occurred to me, it was 17 years ago that the movie was made.
yeah. That was about right for that time, yeah.
Yeah, it was absolutely right. But for some reason, I was just shocked that they didn't all have laptops. And
I believe we were still using dial-up back then.
yes. This was
Yeah.
5 years before I ever got online and we started with dial-up. So,
Oh, yeah.
which and that leads to the part in the movie where it kind of started to lose me, because I loved that beginning. Most of the stuff I remembered and can quote to this day, even before watching it again, was in that first part of the movie. And then they get to the Hippie Olympics, and it kind of slowed down for me at that point.
Yeah, it they had some good material here, like spread throughout the movie, and then
There was the material in the beginning was really sharp, and the pacing was nice and fast, and then they get to that scene, and it just drags.
they were really unsure of what the hell they were doing with this, is really the impression I got.
They didn't improvise, but it almost feels like, okay, now let's just make it up as we go along in the scene.
Well, right, and that's why
Let's
I
kill some
think,
time.
some improv. I'm kind of surprised that it wasn't improvised because it doesn't look like it was something someone would sit down to write.
Yeah.
I mean, it really didn't have a coherent message to it at all.
No.
Pretty much everybody sucks.
It wasn't really a message movie. It was just
Yeah.
it was cliche college movie with a bit of, 90s nostalgia. Or not even
Yeah,
nostalgia at the time. It
I
was just,
know. It wasn't
I'm
such
thinking nostalgia because it is for me, but it
a
was, this is what's going on now, so let's put it, it was just putting it in the present day. It was really just an update of Revenge of the Nerds and Animal House.
Yeah, and I
And
get
all of
there's
those movies.
the fear of political correctness and what it could lead to and stuff, but I mean
I think they tried to say that, but they kind of didn't quite pull it off. He has
Yeah.
this horrible speech at the end, about, don't protest, just party, but which they could have turned into a moment and said something, actually said something with the movie, but they kind of failed there.
Yeah, and it's a question of what they, I mean, if you bring up political correctness and you're, it comes across that you're making a statement. And then when you pretty much shrug and say, I got nothing.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
It's kind of like the Mr. Clown joke after.
Wow.
Yeah, I went back to the Mr. Clown joke.
I
Where
think
did we
we've
believe
talked
that in
about the Mr.
94?
Clown joke on the show before, so for those who, so people know what you're talking about. Now, before we wrap up the review, two things we should talk about. First off,
Okay.
of course, P-Funk.
Yes.
P-Funk has a big part at the end of the movie, one of the best parts. Turns out they were not the first choice to play at the party. Originally, they wanted to get Nirvana, but they were too expensive. Goo Goo Dolls were considered, but Hart Bochner, the director, thought that they wouldn't be recognizable in America.
Cobain said he needed to do this movie like he needed another hole in his head.
Ba-dum-bum. Yeah, they couldn't afford Nirvana. They didn't think the Goo Goo Dolls would be recognizable, so they got so
And they
P-Funk
sunk.
was their third choice.
How do you go from Nirvana to the Goo Goo Dolls too,
It's
which is
kind of
just
it literally is failing up.
what did Barry Manilow say no?
But I mean, they were failing to get who they wanted, so they ended up with someone better than anyone they had considered before.
True.
They literally failed upward.
I'm trying to think of how this would have went with Nirvana playing.
I don't think it would have worked.
It really would not have worked.
No.
Can you see like the black people, on the campus, like going, "Oh, that's Nirvana."
Well, I think that scene was probably written. Obviously, it had to be rewritten when they found out
Well,
who they could get.
yeah.
But I have a lot of that was included because it was P-Funk.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard a lot of P-Funk. I've loved what I've heard, but
Of course.
what I'm realizing is how influential they have been.
Yeah.
Pretty much anybody who did anything funk influenced, particularly with the rock crossover, it came straight from P-Funk.
Well, yeah.
And the other character that we need to get into.
But I don't know it's kind of weird buying into a college campus on in 94 with everyone like P-Funk, man.
Yeah, that's true.
I think the most realistic character of the bunch was actually Jon Favreau, who
Oh,
another
we should get in. We should talk about him because mostly known as a director, of course.
horrendous performance. Good thing he found another job to do.
Yeah.
But his character actually had the most realistic reaction. Who are these guys? That and Jake Busey of going, oh, we were going to see him, and then not recognizing them actually playing.
Oh, that was Jake Busey. I didn't recognize him.
You didn't recognize Jake Busey?
I didn't. Well, at the time, nobody knew who he was, and I wasn't thinking about it.
Well, I don't think he was acting, to give you a hint. He was the hippie.
Yeah, I knew who he was. Now that you say that, I knew who he was, but at watching it, it didn't occur to me.
Yeah.
And the other character we need to discuss is, of course, Pigman.
Oh,
Pigman. The
Oh.
best part of the movie, the one that I, the only part that gets widely quoted, the Cain
Yeah.
Hackman theory.
Yes.
The character's whole purpose in the movie is, oh, he has like what, three scenes? And his thing is, his thesis is that, you know, at any given time, a movie with Michael Caine or Gene Hackman is on TV. He finds a bridge too far with the two of them, and it's his thesis's closing argument. He has such a small part in the movie, but he's by far the most memorable.
And well, I just forgot his name, but he's kind of, I'd say he was in it for more than just a couple three scenes. I mean, he's pretty much a background
Well, he was,
piece.
but he, okay, he has lines at three points in the movie.
Okay, yeah, I was gonna
He
say,
talks when Drazen introduces him,
yeah.
and then when the fuse blows, he has to stand up and his leg's asleep. And then when he finds a bridge too far, those are his only lines in the movie. Actually, no, I think he has a line at the end. He's the one who foams at the mouth. Yeah, because
No,
it
that
took.
was the other band guy, I
Oh,
think.
was? Okay, I wasn't sure.
You're forgetting his other line, shower scene.
Oh, yes. How could I forget that? Because Draws wanted to know when they got to the shower scene for Dressed to Kill.
yes, right.
Which is another line I love, because I remember seeing Dressed to Kill before I was old enough to see Dressed to Kill.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm pretty much done with my notes. Of course, there haven't been any sequels, or and a remake is really just another college movie.
Right.
I'm surprised the guys who did the whole scary movie thing haven't done college movie yet.
And really, back to Pigman, that was probably one of the most realistic, interpretations of what's going on with
Oh,
colleges,
yeah.
considering there's, courses on Lebowski and stuff.
So, yeah, sequels and remakes kind of pointless.
Yes, very much so. Because what would you do? Would you remake this set in the modern time? I
And
mean,
it's any other college movie. It
yeah,
it's
it's almost a remake as it is.
yeah.
So you'd be remaking a remake.
Right. So pointless. So on to Brains.
On to Brains.
Now, like I said, I loved this movie back in the day. It was my college experience. So, I have a lot of nostalgia tied up in this. And for the purposes of the rating, I've tried to kind of divorce the two and look at it objectively, which I
Yeah.
think I always try to do, Airbender aside. And so, really thinking about it objectively, I gotta go three.
Oh wow, I was really expecting you to go higher.
Oh, I want to go four, but that's a full brain of nostalgia, so I'm going three.
All right. Yeah, I'm going with three as well. I mean, it had its moments, in other
Oh yeah,
words.
there's some great bits in the movie. It's definitely.
Right. I think that there's more they could have done to have made this, I don't know. I don't know if they needed realism or if they just needed more gonzo-ness to the movie itself. It seems like they were kind of stuck in the middle. Like they didn't. It's weird for a movie that they're trying to claim that they're politically incorrect and being so brash. It seemed like they were being so careful to play it in the middle. Like
True, true.
like
and,
the
and
worst.
Just slavishly stick to the formula of the college movie.
Right, right. I mean, the worst they could do was call the gay people pillow biters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what could be interesting as far as, okay, here we, rolling back. A remake, set it in the period, but really take the jokes where they should go.
Right. They were far too tame, really. And now I guess I have a homework assignment of talking with someone from Wesleyan University to see if it really was this boring.
So what have we learned?
Would speed bumps on the ramps really be a bad thing?
Depends on how you need to get up the ramp.
Oh, okay.
And I learned that along with Jonathan Taylor Thomas and of course Christian Slater, Jeremy Piven is yet another bastard child of Jack Nicholson.
I also learned you could really get some good use out of the club.
Yes. So, until next week, when we will tentatively be reviewing Get Crazy for our New Year's show. Yeah, we're skipping the whole Christmas thing because we couldn't find a good movie.
Yeah.
We're moving straight on to New Year's. Hopefully we can find that one.
Because it's time for us to take a vacation.
Yeah, what are we doing? 2 weeks off?
At least.
After that? Okay, well, more about that next week.
Yeah.
Until then, of course, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and review on iTunes. It'll help us out. Also find the store, as we mentioned last time. If you buy something from the store and take a photo of yourself in said item and send it to us, we will put it on the site. You can also send us an email, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail.
I was just going to say, they could leave us a voicemail, and all they need to do is call a 414-368-ZTO1, and for the alphanumerically challenged, you can go fuck yourself.
Nice. And of course, always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee.
Yeah.
So, until next week, always remember and never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.
Nicely done, gentlemen.
All right, now what?
Now we run.
Absolutely, positively have to torture a room full of motherfuckers. Accept no imitations.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's me.
Yep.
All right. So PCU.